Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Typical, disgusting display.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
The typical, disgusting, disgusting display. And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back. JC, wait a minute. I forgot. What are we listening to again? Can someone tell us?
Hi, I'm Mila Kunis, and you're listening to JC, Goldie, and valedictorian Alex Sulkin on A Typical Disgusting Display.
That's right. Thank you, Mila. I had forgotten kind of the juxtaposition of the players here.
Is that real or was that AI? It sounded like AI.
First joke of the day.
Hello, this is Mila Kunis.
Someone emailed me and asked if you were confusing salutatorian, which is a ceremonial position that sometimes is elected, with valedictorian, which is an earned position. Which
no.
It doesn't seem
and
like
you can
it.
You can tell this person, not you, I'm sure, that vale comes from the Latin to say goodbye. And so that's what I was. It doesn't come from the Latin of best grades in the class. It's someone.
Oh, so literally everyone else is wrong ever about it?
Yeah.
And you're the one person who's gotten it right?
Yep. Yep. Okay. No, not salutatorian. Not that loser.
And then does Disney know?
You just ask Will Willis.
Does Disney know that you take people who are in your employment and then make them do non-work things for no compensation?
Oh, yeah, Disney's really caring about that now.
What's happening?
It just feels like you took an employee, Mila, and you made her do something that like isn't part of her job for no compensation. I don't know. The whole thing just feels like a human resources.
Goldie, you got it all wrong. I just simply said, if you don't do this, we're going to stop writing Meg jokes. There's nothing untoward about any of this. Thank you, Mila, for giving us that small and clarifying asset. I appreciate it. But Goldie, we got a situation on our hands this week. God, I hate it when I'm right, and it happens so infrequently. Last week, we started talking about how next week, like Carson, who had guest hosts, we have a guest host, and we asked Mr. Mike Scully if he would do that for us, and he generously agreed. He's hilarious. We love him. But somehow, through some ridiculous fuck-up on so many levels, Scully asked John Viner to be his co-host.
With me.
So that's already terrible. We've let the fox into the hen house. It's going to be a god-awful disaster. And JC, I apologize in advance for you having to deal with him, because I know that's not going to be pleasant. But then I wake up this morning to a text from JC that says, Viner is asking Seth onto the podcast. And as Danny Smith might say anticipatorily,
Seth?
Yeah, that Seth, our boss, Seth MacFarlane, who, like, we never thought of that, John. Like, we never thought of that, Viner, to ask Seth MacFarlane. We are calculating the best time to do it because you burn a chip when you ask someone like that. Like, if you're working for Judd Apatow or, you know, or Matt Groening, and you're going to wait till the perfect moment to ask them to do something for you. John just fucking wades into the pool and's like, hey, what about Seth on this show? So I spent a lot of the morning untangling that disaster.
Okay, that was you.
Of the
okay.
show. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we have differing opinions on this, which the perfect time to ask our boss is never. Right. Don't trouble your boss. And this is why maybe you and I are still at Family Guy, is I wouldn't ask my boss to do me a favor. I am there to do my boss favors.
Yes.
That's what an employee does.
We're not as in disagreement as you think here, because I think wait for the perfect time or don't ask. As proof
of
that.
Well, after you lurched at Dana Walden across the table, I don't know what you're doing.
Lurched.
So all I can control is my behavior.
Right. Don't you dare. Dana Walden lives in the ether. Seth's just a guy.
Well, my feeling is don't ask either of them. And if they want to do it, they would let us know.
Right.
Hey, I'm interested in this. And then, of course, they could do it.
Much like
but
John
I would never bother them.
Right.
But Viner's
and then you said
him.
We're in trouble with this Viner thing. I disagree with that. You're in trouble.
Why?
I think I'm going to be kind of like Jack Reacher using a corpse of someone who was just shot to block the rest of the shots and get out of the room. Like
wait,
you're going to be.
Why aren't you in trouble?
No one's going to get to me. It's all going to be you. And by the way, I like what Viner's doing. I like the Joker. He's blowing it all up.
Yeah.
And you ask.
This is,
you know, you've taken enough shots at him, and he's been mentioned enough that I think for him to return fire is not unexpected, nor is it so wrongheaded. I think he has every right to try to blow up our world like the Joker.
Yes.
He's wearing a nurse's costume, and he's
walking
and
away from our hospital. We know.
Yeah.
His clicker doesn't work, thankfully. But here's the thing is like, yes, I agree with that. He has every right to do it if invited in to do it. Why would anyone invite him into it? Like, that's what my beef is with Scully and a little bit with JC.
Because people
here.
Like this reaction that you're giving them, which is they wanted to get under your skin and now they're there. But
yes.
They're not under my skin because all my skin is dead.
Your dermis dead.
So none of this bothers me. I think it's all kind of amusing.
And good luck after the show.
Let's see them fill the hour.
Yeah.
Right? That's the ultimate test.
Hour and a half,
as
by
you've
the way.
Said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Well,
that's right.
Once the recording starts, and we'll see if does Seth MacFarlane show up. My guess is no. Maybe they should go out to Tom Cruise and Paul McCartney. And,
no, I want Paul.
Barack
want
Obama, Michelle so Obama, Paul. Oprah. Just see. Let's see. Get around a nose, and then you know. Circle back around and see who you can get. I'm not even sure they can get John Viner at this point.
Well, the thing is, and those are all great points, but the funny thing, and you know this, and I know this about Viner, is the second they do get punched in the mouth, that's when Viner actually excels.
But yeah,
like when Viner is agitated and angry, there's no one funnier.
Right.
So when things are going wrong for him.
Yes.
That's when he's the best. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they may go wrong for him. He may be in for a rude awakening. And
I
then
hope
we'll
he
all,
is
we'll
because
all take
then
fire.
It'll then it'll like there's no one wants to watch things go right for Viner.
and Goldie, how dare you disassociate yourself from the very first podcast we ever had was you doing a 10-minute monologue about Viner and what an asshole he was for putting that book of yours
I
in the free
said
library.
Asshole.
No, you
said,
didn't. But that was the subtext. Subtext.
It wasn't the. It was just something that
you
happened.
You opened the show, leading with a big insulting story. Well, I mean, it was an insult to you, but
sure,
you aired it out.
Yeah.
So you're going to catch some fire.
Well,
believe me.
You know, and maybe I'll leave this podcast in a free podcast library when he records it. That
that's
anyone
that's
can
every
take.
Podcast library apparently based on the checks we get.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all that said, I want to urge our fans to A, listen, because it's going to be something. And B, please write them a question if you want to know something about either of us or the way they feel about how we're doing on the show or anything you want to ask Mike Scully or John Viner. Please send them an email to atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com.
And I'm still going to be on the show. So if you send in the emails, I will read them. maybe unbeknownst to John and Scully.
I mean, but you guys are going to be so busy interviewing Clint Eastwood, like, you're going to have time to do this.
Then Don Siegel turns to me on the set of Dirty Harry and says, we need Dana Gould to do a Clint Eastwood. Maybe we'll ask him later. We got Dana Gould coming up in a minute. But anyway, we're bracing for impact of the asteroid of John Viner, which will be next week.
It'll be fun.
I'm welcoming the impact. I'm out of the bridge.
I know. Goldie, whenever I see those movies where an asteroid hits the Earth and there's like a giant wave that comes in, I just picture you on the beach just embracing it.
Like. Well, I did want to just bring up briefly, because you've now brought up asteroids, spaceships.
Yeah.
So, I don't, you know, there's been in the last 2 years this surge of alien and UFO sightings and actual investigations. The government is now officially acknowledging that there are objects of interest that are unidentified. And there was a report, and I never know which British newspapers or websites are reliable and which are, you know, false flags. So it's one called The Independent.
Oh,
I believe I found the link off the Drudge Report, which itself is, you know,
questionable.
It's fine, but whatever. Yeah. So the report was that there is a team, an official U.S. team of investigators who go in to, they have crashed alien craft.
Yes.
And they've recovered them. And that they go in and they recover the wreckage. And that one of these things was about 30 feet in diameter on the outside.
Yeah.
And then the investigator went in and said it was football fields big and disorienting, that it was somehow compressing space and time on the outside, and the inside was huge, and he felt so disoriented he barfed, and then he like staggered out. But
well, this is we gotta study that.
Well, how is this not all we hear about? Like, the news every day is just full of, like, you know, Trump is now under, and they found this, and it's like, if there's another race space that's just kind of hovering and they make themselves known, anything we care about is now irrelevant. Like,
done.
Everything about our lives that we hold so sacred, our jobs and money. It's like, look, I have all this U.S. currency that I can spend to get these up. It's like, throw it out the window. Oh, I'm very, you know, Jesus. Jesus is alive. There's that's like, we've got one tiny thing here. They don't know about it. They're in control. And so, like, we're
Jesus
on the cusp.
Is a lie.
Like, we're on the cusp of everything we know being blown apart. But what's hilarious to me is I'm starting to believe that there are these things that have come to Earth, these non-human things that are flying around. But they flew countless light years, countless trillions of miles to be here. And then they get here and they're looking down and they're just going, like, we flew so far. And then they're going, yeah, I don't know. Look at it, though.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, when we go to a restaurant, you're on a road trip and you want to eat, and there's a restaurant, and you go, I'm really hungry. And then you look in and you go, I don't know. Should we just go to the gas station and get some almonds, though?
Yeah.
This is just going to be like a lot of work for not much. They're looking at our planet and going, maybe.
Oh, I'm so intrigued by this.
Oh.
30 square feet and inside it's football fields.
First
that
of all,
could that would solve the housing
these
crisis.
These aliens are going to need a human who turns on the human race to help them, and I'm volunteering already for like okay, here's who these people are, and get rid of this and like march them in and like steal the ocean, take the water.
Yeah.
Let's take me back.
We're cool, right?
Yes. Well, maybe we make this podcast the official podcast of our alien overlords.
Well, yeah, I know that radio waves and such, they go out into space, and hopefully they're capturing everything, and they capture that, like, there are these two, three people. And I don't know if JC's volunteering.
She's in.
Okay, so there are three people, and they've agreed to sort of sell out the entire human race and go back to whatever alien planet there is in the you know, compressed space-time spaceship, throwing up the whole time.
Throwing and barfing.
That's the one consequence.
Yeah.
You have to be constantly throwing up.
Well, just.
But are you excited about this, or is this just something?
Yeah.
No, I'm incredibly excited. And, you know, listen, ever since the day I was slightly too large and carried out of E.T., I've been fascinated by this whole thing. And I honestly, Close Encounters is a great movie, too, that I was a little too young to enjoy the first time around. But when I saw it,
It's fascinating, and it feels credible.
As Spielberg shows us,
yes,
if you believe enough in aliens, then you can be a terrible parent and ditch your family and still be a redeemable human being.
I was waiting for an actual lesson there. Oh,
that
serves me right. Serves me right.
You know, you just go, oh, I'm really thinking about this, so I'm forming my food into it. Like, you can think about it and just eat. You don't have to, like, build your food into a model of it to go, no, but I really think. Okay.
But had you believed before you had read this article? Had you been curious and sort of believed anyway?
Well, it's something that I've been fascinated with since I was a teenager, and that statistically, you know, when you hear things like there are as many planets in our galaxy as there are grains of sand on the entire Earth, and then there are as many galaxies as there are grains. So you go, yes, one of these has some life, at least. Probably many of them have life.
Infinite numbers.
And that if there is life, an infinite form of life, that some have probably progressed to the point where they're able to navigate whatever this universe is.
Yeah.
But then you just wonder, like, why would it be worth even... We're so unadvanced, I'm sure, to them.
When I was living in San Francisco in the early 90s, I had a roommate. His name was James Fox. I also grew up with him. He and his girlfriend went to Vegas to Area 51.
Yeah.
And brought this little camera with them. And they'd just taken some ecstasy.
Oof.
And they were filming. And all of a sudden, two, figures, light figures, start moving around in unnatural ways that we're familiar with. So he came back very, very excited and thrilled about this. And it became his life obsession. And he's world renowned for studying UFOs. And like, you can look him up, James Fox. He's like, he's done documentaries and stuff. But it was like while he was living with us.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
he must be going apey now with this new news. And Goldie, do you remember where the spaceship was?
In this report,
yeah,
I don't know. It must have been the U.S. because a U.S. team was recovering it. But in Western Mass, a site with a plaque from the governor certifying that in the 60s, a craft landed there, and that the government wants people to know they believe that this happened.
Yes,
there's an unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a great unsolved mystery.
You're right, and that's in their Unsolved Mysteries reboot, right? That's one of the new ones.
It's in the second season, I want to say.
Yeah.
I've watched it a few times.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and I've been to the bridge and the site.
Oh, cool.
And
I mean, there are interviews with astronauts that assure that there are other life forms out there when they've been up in space. So, yeah.
Mm.
Can't wait.
It sounds like we got to the bottom of that.
That was quick.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now let's get to the bottom of our show with a very special guest star. Let's get in to Johnny Joe.
Whoa, from Hollywood, here's special guest Johnny.
Yes, sir. Right. Special guest Johnny's. We're so excited to have the hilarious writer, comedian, actor Dana Gould here today. And he's generously agreed to join us for Johnny Jokes. Ooh. So he's going to be last because his Johnny is excellent. All right, for a less excellent Johnny, here we go. After a brief and tumultuous reign, CNN CEO Chris Licht is stepping down. The news network sent out a press release stating simply, Licht he split. Not as good. The origins of masturbation have been traced back to primates who lived 40 million years ago. Yeah. Scientists realized the connection when they found a monkey buried next to a box of Puffs Plus. Puffs Plus. Thank you, Goldie.
Is aloeing his dick. I'll aloe it to happen.
Alouette. All right. Well, maybe you heard this. Some sad news.
That first joke was lickety shit, though.
You had to. You gave a compliment, so you had to take it away. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. JC, get that finger ready, because sadly, Ted Kaczynski, the man more famously known as the Unabomber, died in prison last week.
He gone!
Yeah, he gone. Family members say the funeral will be ticking casket.
Yeah.
Ticking casket.
Nice.
Oh my gosh, and I really didn't write enough this week because this is the one I'm closing with. A woman in the UK... Oh, no. Who took the abortion pill after the term limit had expired has been sentenced to 28 months in prison. Well, at least she doesn't have a little baby at home.
Oh, jeez.
I like it. That
terrible.
Was good.
All right, Johnny, good. Johnny Dose, take it away.
All right, well, President Biden had a root canal today. The dentist offered him anesthesia, and Biden said, "Nah, no thanks. I'll just fall, hit my head, and conk myself out." Okay. Well, former President Donald Trump has been indicted for possessing classified information. It's the closest Trump will ever come to having class.
Yeah.
Here. Had to get him.
Here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this week... smoke from Canadian wildfires made the air in New York City totally unbreathable. The smoke was so thick.
How thick was it?
The smoke was so thick, it forced millions of New Yorkers to pee indoors. Okay. And I will end on, I'm going to end on a Norm.
All right.
Okay. Norm MacDonald. According to an NBC report, deep fake porn is thriving on Twitter. In related news, I'm now on Twitter at deepfake norm.
All right. And finally, our special guest, Johnny, take it away.
Well, it's summertime here in Los Angeles. You wouldn't know it. The weather doesn't really change. In fact, normally I know when it's autumn when I take the family down to Starbucks and watch the cups change colors.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's so good.
Christmas season comes earlier and earlier, and now by the end of October, the gals on Pornhub are wearing Santa hats.
Yes.
You know, 3D printers are in the news. They say that it'll be a huge boon to the medical industry that they'll one day be able to create a replica of a human being that is undetectable to the human eye with a 3D printer. But until then, they all come out looking like Ron DeSantis. Tomorrow night, we have a big show tomorrow. The show's good tonight, but tomorrow night we have a very big show. Tomorrow night, Marty Allen will be here to read the Federalist Papers with a thick Chinese accent. And this is from Aaron Lee, one of our home viewers who sent submitted one. Aaron Lee, young Aaron Lee from Dubuque, Iowa. Tomorrow night, Ted Kaczynski, John Krasinski, and Jane Krakowski will all be here to sing from their new musical, The Other KKK. That's very exciting. Hang on, I have a prediction from the Far East. This is a Karnak one for the viewer listeners at home. I'm holding an envelope to my head.
Nice.
60 minutes.
60 minutes.
How long does it take Joe Biden to pee?
Yeah.
Skinamarink.
Skinamarink.
Skinamarink. Skinamarink. It's a new movie. Skinamarink. What's the little piece left over after a bris? Shimmering. One more. It's the last one. Last one. Predictions left on Funk and Wagnall's front porch. Sealed mason jar. I've not seen these. Elon Musk.
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk. What is the little piece left over after a bris?
Skin of a rink.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What a treasure. Oh, you, sir, are a regional treasure. That was fantastic. God, you know what? For those of you listening, I mean, Goldie and I got schooled in the art of actually trying to portray Carson right there, because Dana is one of the best. The references, what was the mason jars? It was sealed in a
sealed in a mason jar on Funk and Wagnall's front porch. It's not fair, because I actually research it, because I have a show that is literally a copy of The Tonight Show.
I know, but you've been doing Carson forever. Like, yeah, but they're fun.
They're fun to do, and you just like, I just write a ton of them just because they make me laugh. Tomorrow night, Captain Kangaroo will be here to talk about the action he saw in the rice paddies of Nam.
I love it. Oh, so you got the soft intro up top, and Dana Gould is here with us today. He's written for so many shows, notably The Simpsons, and we recently worked with you on the Ted Show, which is coming out later this summer.
Yeah,
Dana's
whoa!
I think I'm here to announce
coming out.
I don't know. I think it's coming out later this year, not this summer. I think I got it wrong.
Yeah. All you Peacock subscribers, get ready.
Somebody said it was one of those things like, well, I didn't think of that. I suck. HBO Max is now Max. Your move, Peacock.
Yeah, yes, I saw that online. That was funny. So funny. Anyway, Dana, you're a hilarious writer, comedian, performer.
Thank you.
We've known you for a long time. We appreciate you being on here. But those Johnnies, they're just spectacular. I know. Let's talk about that up top. This is for Dr. Zayas on YouTube, right?
Yeah, like, Dr. Z. Hanging with Dr. Z.
So can I just, I wanted to interject before we get into Hanging with Dr. Z. So I saw the movie Planet of the Apes and said, okay. And then I never thought about it again.
God, I love Planet of the
Apes. What happened to you?
I have no idea. I saw it when I was a kid. I became aware of it I was 4 years old when it came out. So not long after that, 5, 6, I just became aware of it. I saw the commercials on TV, and there was something about it that absolutely galvanized me. And I cannot explain it. It's the way some people are into, you know, they just are obsessed with baseball. There is something about it. My mother tells me that, I was the fifth of six kids, and I was very kind of didn't make a big deal of myself. I was kind of faded into the woodwork. And my mother said when I was six, there was a commercial for Escape from the Planet of the Apes that was being released in the theater, and that I
climbed up on the coffee table and looked my father in the eye, which I never did, and said, "You're taking me to that."
Wow.
And they did. They took me to see it at the drive-in.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I can't explain it. I did, because I had a lot of older brothers that were bigger than me and athletes. I had a therapist once go, "Well, maybe it was because you felt like the world was topsy-turvy and your world was topsy-turvy too." I was like, maybe. Maybe it's just like gorillas in leather jackets on a horse are cool. You know?
I like when therapists take a big shot like that and miss.
A big swing.
Yeah, it's funny.
Often.
It's fun to sit back and just go, "Nah, that was like not even close."
Dr. Feldman looks like he hurt a shoulder on that missed swing there. The trainer's coming over.
I'm mutilating a joke, and the comedian who I'm telling it is probably glad I can't remember his name because I'm mutilating a joke. But it was like I had a therapist who actually worked at a carnival. And his office was near a carnival. And one day after a particularly gut-wrenching session, he said, "You know, you did a lot of really good work today. Take any animal off the top shelf."
That's good. So Planet of the Apes, for me, and I maybe this is, it's a combination of the striking imagery, the apes themselves, the music, at least of that first movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
unbelievable. And Charlton Heston in that first movie, like he's a big star. Like Ted Knight, they both go at 110% on the reactors.
Here was a note never said on that set. Want to do a big one just to see?
Yeah, more teeth, Chuck. More teeth.
Yeah, I know.
Our friend Chris DeLuca has a funny joke about Planet of the Apes and the ending. And wait, so this whole thing took place on Liberty Island?
I always thought of it because, like, if he was an idiot, it's like, "My God, they had a Statue of Liberty too."
That was probably Charlton's thoughts when he read the script. Like, wow, this is a funky ending. I don't know why Heston is Carson in my
life. They're very similar. Yeah,
this is the long way of saying you have this hilarious talk show where you play the host and you're in full Dr. Zaius from Planet of the Apes costume.
Yeah.
And you're interviewing somebody and it's hilarious. If you have not checked that out and you're listening right now, you should check that out because it's so funny. What's it called? Dr. Z?
Hanging with Dr. Z.
Is this something you're doing mostly for the money?
Mostly for the money other people make off it that aren't me. No, it's a financial wrecking ball.
Right. But, money pit.
But since I'm really hoping for season two of Ted.
But have you gotten to meet like the people involved with the movie through this? And are you consulted on the remakes? Do they ever say, "This guy's a great writer and a super fan. We should ask him what he thinks.
The remakes, they couldn't care less. But I do know, like this weekend, I mean, the phone... I'll give you the 30-second version. When I was on the Ben Stiller show, I had an idea for a sketch, which was Planet of the Apes the musical, because I wanted to do the makeup. That's the only reason I did the sketch. And it was going to be like a commercial, like the way like when Rent comes to town, it's like at the Pantages, it's Rent and its little clips. And then because of the budget, you needed to do two sketches per sketch. So I thought, well, the second sketch in the second act will be Dr. Zaius's Mark Twain tonight. And then we can do two for one. And we got canceled before we could do it. So we didn't get to do it, but I always had the idea. Then at The Simpsons, the idea came up. I believe the idea originated, had nothing to do with me whatsoever. I believe it originated with either David X. Cohen or Steve Tompkins. Bill and Josh were also involved in that. I know that Steve Tompkins came up with the title "Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off," and David Cohen wrote "I Hate Every Ape I See from Chimpanzee to Chimpanzee."
I know that's such a great line.
It's great. It's David Cohen. Yeah. I mean, come on. I had nothing to do with that. 100 years later, like 20 years later, I was talking to John Hodgman, and he had an internet contest about somebody doing Dr. Zaius doing Mark Twain tonight, because he found a photo of Maurice Evans reading Mark Twain's biography on the set in the makeup.
Right.
And I just said to him, I was like, Oh, that's so funny. I wrote that as a sketch 20 years ago and never got to do it. And he said, do you want to do it at my show at Sketchfest?
Oh, wow.
And my first thought was, no. That sounds like a lot of work. But then I know a lot of makeup people because I'm really into the sort of, you know, horror movie world. And
that's cool, yeah.
I've written a couple and I'm friends with a lot of those people. So I thought, well, I know I can do the makeup. And then I thought, when I walk out, it'll be a laugh. And then once they realize that it's not a crappy mask, that it's the whole deal,
yeah,
I'll get a much bigger laugh. Yeah. Right. And I really got greedy. And so we did it. And it's on YouTube. If you go Dr. Zaius Mark Twain, you'll find it. And and it was exactly what I thought. It was, you know, I came out, laugh, and then I started talking, and there's this giant crazy laugh.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then that went on YouTube, and then like Joel Hodgson said, hey, would you do that for the Mystery Science Theater telethon? And I called up the, because when I first wanted to do it, I had to call my friend Greg Nicotero at KNB FX, and they do like The Walking Dead and every Quentin Tarantino film, like they're huge. And I said, this is the conversation. I was like, hey, is there anybody over there that I can fly up to San Francisco to do a movie quality Dr. Zaius makeup on me? Hang on a minute. Yeah, Andy will do it.
That's so easy.
Great. These people, it's like their life. They're yeah, like, so they do, excited
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. And oh, so cool. and the guy who was Andy Schoenberg, who's my makeup guy that does it all the time. And so then I did it again for Joel Hodgson, and then Turner Classic Movies was doing it as a Fathom event, which is when they show an old movie in a series of theaters at the same time across the country.
Oh, awesome. Right.
And they interview somebody from the movie, and Ben Mankiewicz, who's actually very funny and really gets it, said he saw it, and he said, would you do the Dr. Zaius thing? We can interview you as Dr. Zaius.
Oh, that's so great.
And I said, yeah. But then I had to, for the first time, come up with what the character was.
Right. It was like a full interview.
Yeah, because he wasn't
reading Mark Twain anymore.
Right. So what it was is just like, it was just when Orson Welles was on Merv Griffin. He's just like always just dropping names, and you know, and he was an ape. Planet of the Apes was a movie he made, one of many. It's like when I was doing With Six You Get Egg Roll at the Pasadena Playhouse with a young Lindsay Wagner, who's a delight.
Yeah, one of those.
And Artie people. Jacobs calls me about this film called Planet of the Apes. And you know what I never say? Money is the one gift no one gives back. So I took the gig. You know, and then it just kind of grew into this.
That's
and
great.
Now must... his Instagram is like his Zelig Stories of Hollywood. Like, it was the first day of shooting, and I woke up on Russ Tamblyn's roof wearing Barbara Feldon's hat, and it's not a good way to start a movie.
That must be so fun for you to, like, really dig into those, like, Hollywoodisms, those little throwaway phrases that kind of character uses.
Yeah, and it's 100%. And the Instagram things are really funny because you get to write them. And Pete Aronson, who's a writer and a exec, writes a lot of them. Pete Aronson, Rob Cohen, and I kind of are the big three. And then we have Mike Rowe, Aaron Lee, who you know, a guy named Ryan Nunnerly, Tammy Golden. Like, we have people that help out. So it's not just me. There's a lot of people.
That's awesome.
That keep it up to that level. But it's,
I mean, but it's all like a reflection of when you probably thought about going into show business and when you even moved here, what you wanted the business to be versus now where we exist in some, like, we're like a subsidiary of tech companies and there's no glamour or anything. Nothing interesting ever happens.
Yeah. I love 100%. And I love that world where I guess the person like Peter Lawford in 1969, you know, just knew everybody. He goes, you know, he's going to have brunch with Keith Moon in Malibu. And then he's going to go meet Joan Bennett. You know, it's just like everybody knows. Yeah, there was a line in the first one where I go like, you know, it was like, you know, the Forbidden Zone was the big bugaboo in the movie. You want to know the real Forbidden Zone? Being in escrow with Alan Alda. My God. How many times can you inspect a chimney? You know, oh, it's just, it, and
like,
it,
you're like a pig in shit coming up with that.
I am, but the bear, I also know that I showed it to John Landis, who I know, and his response was really funny, with just all caps, not obscure enough.
Oh, you got Landis trolling you on this. That's hilarious.
I have to remember that one.
Oh yeah, it's like, yeah, so, I make no. Andy Kindler said it. My target audience is men my age who are me. I make no. I'm tired of. I'm the anti-panderer.
Yeah, right.
So how many episodes do you have now, and what are your plans?
We just finished the third season, wow. And we do about 8, so 24 probably. That's They're about awesome. 10 minutes long, but we have like a band and a set, and this year we have a real set. We didn't do it virtually. Some live guests. It started because of COVID. Rob Cohen, we were trying to do something during COVID, and we were going to do a parody of that Henry Miller Is Alive and Awake documentary with Dr. Z talking about being in the business. And then Rob said, like, why don't we just do a talk show like Space Ghost? Because they can be on a monitor and it'll be COVID safe. And thousands of dollars later. So that's how it started. I would love to get to do it like Fernwood Tonight. Like, I think it could be a really funny half hour comedy show. It's weekly or even nightly. I could do it that way on a streamer. And but thanks to Seth MacFarlane, we have permission from Disney to do it on a Disney owned streamer. And I think if I just wait a year, that'll be all of them.
Right.
What did Seth have to do with that? He made a phone call. What happened there?
Yeah. Because he loves the show. He's been very generous.
No,
with
he
his,
showed it to me. Like he was, oh, he introduced me to it. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And he said, have you taken this anywhere? And I said, well, here's the thing. If I ask permission and they say, no, I can't do it. But right now, as long as I'm not making any money, which I assure you I'm not.
pretty clear about that.
Yeah. It's like a Star Wars fan film, and they just kind of like let it go. And he said, like, well, can I ask? And I was like, yeah. And
that's so
basically
cool.
Said, yeah, you can do. And they said, you can do this. You know, it'd be great to once this season is done, to kind of take it as a package and maybe get to go out with it and try to get somebody interested in it. They said it was very funny because the Disney said, well, we have to ask Fox Film because they're still doing ape movies. They have a new one coming out called Kingdom on the Planet of the Apes. Hmm. And they were like, I'm assuming that they thought they were going to go, no way.
Right.
They were just the opposite. They said, yes, please do it. Please. We love because it has nothing to do with what they're doing. They're in a whole other kind of universe with the Andy Serkis stuff.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It keeps it in the zeitgeist. It makes it hip, supposedly. Right. certainly to that audience, and gives them a way to promote it. Now, they're all for it. It's just getting somebody, getting an executive streamer who's over 40 to go, oh, I remember this. This might be funny. You don't need to know Planet of the Apes to think the show's funny.
No, not at all. And but by the way, good for Fox Film. I mean, because usually you hear that story in the other version. You know,
we're in a different era, though. I don't know if you remember. This is probably about 6 or 7 years ago that there was an audio house that had the picture locks of a number of shows, and they got stolen, and then they attempted to blackmail people saying, like, send us 50 bitcoins or we'll. So anyway, the show I had on Fox that was not doing well, Making History, we get this ransom note like, I've seized the Making History finale and I'm prepared to release it on YouTube unless you give me 50 bitcoins. And we just wrote back like, if you can get anyone to watch this on any platform for any reason,
we'll give you
we will give you the money. And I think that's probably their attitude. Is just it can only help.
Yeah.
Awareness.
Any rising tide lifts all apes.
That's exactly what I was going to say. A rising tide lifts all boats.
So let's stop talking about Planet of the Apes.
Please,
now.
thank
no,
God.
I want to talk more about it.
Thank the Lord.
You got what you wanted, Tiger. How does it taste?
Well, in the movie, he's the leader of the expedition.
Yes, and he's giving everybody
which means he's in charge of morale.
Yes.
And he's just ragging everybody. Yes. It would be like in Star Trek, like, Captain, we're surrounded by Klingons. Good, we deserve to die. No, you're the captain. Yeah.
Charge.
My favorite, so when I was a kid, I lived near the drive-in, and I saw the movies at the drive-in, and then in high school, I worked at that drive-in.
Oh,
it's the drive-in amazing. And the Adam Sandler movie, Hubie Halloween.
Oh,
the drive-in.
Is that a real movie?
Yeah, he made a. I think it's called Hubie Halloween, and at one point, whatever the name of it is, I didn't say. But I know that the drive-in that they go to is the drive-in that I worked at in high school, and it's still going. The
awesome.
Mendon, the Mendon twin. You can go there tonight, Alex.
I'm just getting. I'm just getting your joke, Hubie Halloween. That's not what it was called. No, it was like Eight Lonely Nights or Eight.
No. I thought it was like Hubie Halloween.
Hubie Halloween. It's on Netflix. Halloween.
I thought he was saying Hubie Halloween for that like Eight Nights of Hanukkah movie.
No, I wish. The 90s. I'm not that clever. I'm not that clever.
Oh, my God. And just how you casually threw it in, I was like, oh, my God. Okay, good. I'm glad I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm not that good. Long story longer. So when the new ones came out, I would go to the drive-in. There's a drive-in here that I love that I go to. And I made my kids go. And then I was showing them the original one the next day. And, they lasted like 11 minutes. And then they're like, please, can we leave? But the scene where the ship is sinking in the lake, my daughter, who was like 7 or 8 years old, went, Dad, their clothes are in there. What it like to do DVD commentary with kids, like 5-10 year olds watching
That's
The Departed?
It is a great idea.
I like spaghetti.
That's a fantastic idea.
I know. Yeah.
So you mentioned, so this is what, you know, it's taking up a lot of your time and energies right now, but it's so funny and well worth it. So let's go back, because you talked about you're the fifth of six kids, and like Goldie and I, you grew up in the Metro West area. Tell us a little bit. You, what was the name of your town?
Hopedale.
That's in the Worcester area, isn't it?
It is. It's in Worcester County, and it's still there. Home to me and Joe Perry from Aerosmith.
Yeah, baby.
His mom was a gym teacher at the high school, Mrs. Ooh. Perry.
Mrs. Perry, the gym teacher.
And awesome. It's a little mill town, super small.
Yeah.
And I grew up there. I went to UMass and the whole deal.
Can I do a quick impression of Mrs. Perry, the gym teacher?
Run this way.
Anyway, go ahead.
Now do you know the story of that song?
No.
What he was
No, this is great. I get to drop a name and brag. This
awesome.
Is great. I am an incredibly fortunate person, and I got to work with Mel Brooks for a good stretch of time.
Wow.
2019. And Steven Tyler.
So prime Brooks.
Yeah, exactly. He was great, though. I mean, I worked with him for like a year every day. And like,
amazing.
He's great. I can't say enough good about him. And
course.
He's yelled at me, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was yelling, actually, to be completely honest, he was yelling at his oldest son, but yelling at me, saying what he wants to say to his oldest son.
Right, yes. Cool.
Yeah, not Max from the first marriage. Yeah, yeah. Projective interjection.
Yeah.
And so, but I've seen him mad.
Yes.
But he said that Steven Tyler wrote that song because of Young Frankenstein. And they're like, walk this way.
Oh.
Because he goes, they wanted to meet him. He goes, I get a call, Steven Tyler. I don't know who it is. I know Paul McCartney. I don't know who. So he comes in. You know, he looks, whatever he looks like. And we just talk and talk. And then I think we're done. No, we're talking some more.
Wait, that's unbelievable. That's a true story then, that Steven Tyler got walked this way from the joke?
That's what I was told.
Well, it's very funny to have to picture explaining Aerosmith to Mel Brooks before the internet. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't have any screens or tools to really show him what it was.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about Mel is that he doesn't wear glasses, but he has a giant Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass that he reads.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never liked glasses. That's hilarious. Okay, so you're growing up small mill town, just outside of Worcester,
and you're from.
I'm from Weston.
Okay,
Goldie is from Shotheard Round the World,
right?
And JC parts unknown.
Yeah, sure. I'm from Marin County. I grew up.
Where in Marin?
Mill Valley.
Sure.
I grew up.
I used to live in the city.
Oh, nice. Yeah, fair.
I used to substitute DJ on Live 105.
What?
Come on.
Come on now.
Give us a ramp up to Sister Golden Hair.
No, Live 105 was 360 degrees of modern rock. Everything from Morrissey to the Smiths.
That was one of my favorite stations.
Everything from Morrissey to the Smiths.
So Morrissey and the Smiths.
Love it. And everything in between.
I was just telling, I think it was last week where I was saying the soft rock station, Soft and Warm, The Quiet Storm, KBLX. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and then K-Fog was the classic rock station.
Yes.
Oh. K-Fog, the music that killed Bill Graham.
He lived in Mill Valley.
He did.
I loved growing up Boston area radio. I thought it was really good, and I miss it now. Like, you don't...
WCOZ, WFNX,
I wasn't quite as cool. I listened to, like, ZLX and BCN. And
BCN was
and,
it, yeah.
And 103.3 WHTT. That was like 80s hits.
Did you have COZ? COZ was the classic, was the heavy metal station. Like,
oh, that doesn't seem like Alex.
By our time, it was AAF and BCN.
Yeah,
AAF. Yeah, WAAF, the Rock and Roll Air Force.
My first like comedy was I would call into WKPE Cape 104, and I would do these voices, and they would put me on.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Joe Rosetti?
I don't remember who the DJ was, but I was like, hey, man, I want to hear some Jimi Hendrix. I want to hear it really bad. I want to hear Hey Joe. I shot my old lady, too. Can you put on Hey Joe? And they'd be right.
Yeah, call me.
That's amazing.
You sound like the muttering animated character in, like, the Hudson Brothers.
Yeah. No, I just was bored. I would dial
That's
in.
So good.
They would put me on.
Yeah. I love learning these things.
Yeah, Dana, any Hudson Brothers anecdotes that you could share with our fans?
Not obscure enough.
I had to explain the band Bread to the Hudson Brothers.
You don't have Hudson Brothers, but you have, who are those two other guys Sid and Marty Croft?
Oh, Sid and Marty Croft. I worked with Sid.
Yeah,
and Marty.
You have a good story about one of them.
I got a bunch. I wrote the Sigmund and the Sea Monster movie.
Wow.
Which would have been really good. It was a children's action comedy. It was Gremlins with sea monsters.
Oh, I love it already.
They didn't answer a phone and go "Shello." They were animals, and it would have been a really fun movie. And it was, you know, when Will Ferrell was making Land of the Lost, that, you know, the IP went through the roof. So the And those two guys, Sid and Marty, I love them both. And they could not be more different from each other. And I get, like, answering machine. I get a call at, like, 11:45 at night. Dana, it's Sid. I just saw The Princess and the Frog. That's what Sigmund is, Dana. Oh, no. Children have to love him. Remember, Dana, the script is everything. It's like... The next message would be like 6 hours later. Hey, my brother Marty told me he called you. Whatever it was, just delete it. Jesus Christ.
So that's a fertile ground for a great script right there. Definitely not going to get torn apart.
I can't tell you how much I hate. I don't have the words to tell you how much I hate my brother.
The excruciating cadence of the Marty message is true artistry, where you're like, this person's making me wait for something very stupid, but like, there's no way. By fast forwarding it, I'll miss it. I'll waste more time trying to like fast forward and get back.
That said, he has he's 90 something.
Wow.
He lives in the palace. He's got he's an old hippie. He is a pure old hippie. Like, you know, has like a beautiful, like,
$3 trillion log cabin house in the Palisades, was one of the original investors in Erewhon.
Wow.
And I did his podcast like 2 months ago. Like, I love Sid. I love them both. They're lovely people. But to work with them was really a... And then, so then Land of the Lost comes out and doesn't do well. It had a hanging with Dr. Z level bandwidth, but a much Star Wars budget.
Yes.
I just get this message on Monday at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Hey, Dane, it's Marty. You can stop typing. Will Ferrell fucked it up.
That's amazing. Oh, you saw behind the curtain of our childhood there. It's so amazing. That's fantastic. So I wanted to back up to something you said earlier, which was you said when you saw the commercial for Planet of the Apes, not to get back to that specifically, but when you saw that and you looked your dad in the eye, you didn't ever do that. So was that the kind of house in which you grew up?
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. It was very loud. Yeah, it was very...
kind of stuck in the 50s in its ways.
yeah, perfect. Yeah, you know, but you know, everybody... I was the only person I knew that wasn't a crazy alcoholic... gun-toting lunatic.
Right.
Everybody hunted, everybody fished, everybody drank. It was, you know, it's Massachusetts, but it might as well be upstate New York. You know, it's that same kind of Scotch-Irish mentality. A lot of camo, a lot of gun racks. And I just was this weird kid that had no interest in any of it. And obviously, because it was 70s, and this is weird. I'm very good friends with Bobcat Goldthwait, and Bobcat and I have the same exact thing. Like, from that era, he's from Syracuse. I'm from Worcester, which is the same thing.
Yeah.
We were thought to be gay because we did not want to go hunting.
Right.
Wow. And they couldn't.
And this is Massachusetts, the liberal beacon, you know.
It's liberal till you get, you know, it's like, yes, Cambridge.
Yeah.
You go over to Boston and you're out of the liberal bubble.
It's also liberal till anything goes slightly not the way they wanted.
Yeah. And it's like, SWAT! Barry Crimmins used to have a really funny joke, the late great Barry Crimmins, about guys you see driving around Cambridge on a bike and they have those like dental mirrors on their helmet. And he goes, and the poor kids on a backpack leaning against their back going, I can't believe my dad's an asshole.
Oh, so that's such a, I mean, what a strange way to grow up. I'm sure feeling the way that you felt and being noticeably different from everyone going on the hunting trips.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Was that, I mean, that must have been part of the impetus for getting into comedy. Is that something that drove you at an early age?
There were, you know, again, it's like six people in a 3-bedroom house in a duplex, you know?
Yeah.
And there were only a couple of things where everyone in the house would be quiet and watch. Everybody would watch a baseball game or a football game or a hockey game, but they're screaming.
Yeah.
Oh, right, you know, right.
Screaming and kicking the TV and, you know, but the things, you know, no need for Freud here. The things that would keep them quiet are all the things that I love. Any Clint Eastwood movie, the Andy Griffith show, any James Bond movie, George Carlin, were all the things that everybody would like go, all right, shut up.
Yeah.
And Andy Griffith Carlin was the one that I sort of really like, I could do that. I think I like from a very young age, I can do that. And he got attention and didn't have to fight. And it was perfect. And that was really like, I knew I wanted to do what I do from like 13, 14 on.
Well, then that's kind of a blessing that you did.
Oh, 100%.
Were they like, you're not funny? I mean, you're just quiet.
Oh, they didn't. Oh, yeah. They didn't think I was funny at all. And I'm not like my brother, Kevin, in conversation is funnier than I will ever be. My brother Kevin is like Bill Murray-ish
wow.
his just personality and the way he can tell a story.
Yeah.
Just insane. The stories of his drunken antics in our hometown are legendary. So, but yeah, no, and I wanted to be a comedian and an actor. And so, and that really drove me out of my hometown because everybody else lives 5 minutes from where we grew up. And yeah. I live.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you just gave such a, in terms of self-therapy and self-diagnosis, you gave such an accurate assessment of kind of why you got into comedy in terms of it quieted your family down. It got attention from them.
Right.
But does that get you anything in your adult life? Like the fact that you know everything about yourself like that, because I'm on this quest to like figure out stuff about myself all the time, but you know all this stuff. And do you feel happier for knowing it?
It's interesting. The thing, I had a bit in 1972 when I was six.
Wow.
I had a bit, which was I could do Nixon. And my dad would have his friends over and would call me down from upstairs.
Wow.
To do Nixon for his friends. And they would laugh and I get approval and I go back upstairs.
Do you remember what lines you would say?
I would just go, "My fellow Americans, let me make this perfectly clear." And
it's so cute. And then,
and I had a lot of opinions about the opening to China,
triangular diplomacy.
You know, Cambodia is not an independent country if it's filing munitions down to North Vietnam.
You were so sophisticated at this.
That's when you got sent upstairs. It's like, let's not get too specific with the geopolitics.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
But it was, it was right there. It's like, no need for Freud. Like, I get it.
Yeah,
there you go. Well, I get it.
You're also fortunate that you're not far from Boston, which wasn't, I don't know, is it still? It was a comedy hub.
Not now, but at the time it was a I got, what do they say is like, Robert Evans used to say that luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Goldie does a hell of a Robert Evans, by the way.
Well, here's the line he did. You do a better Robert Evans than I do. I did have dinner with Robert Evans.
Oh.
But the line that they did on The Simpsons that I had nothing to do with was Homer couldn't sleep and he was watching Robert Evans on Charlie Rose. And it's just, and he goes, I get a phone call. Charlie Blue Dawn's having a birthday party. Was I nervous? I had butterflies like Jason's at Chili. I called Bobby Town, and three drafts later, we had ourselves a banner. Happy birthday, Charlie.
Three drafts to get the happy birthday.
Call Bobby Town.
Bobby Town for three drafts on that one.
I had dinner with him because my ex-wife was a big showbiz force, and we had dinner with Mr. Evans, and he was wearing a white turtleneck with a bolo tie.
Goldie, you spent day with him.
Yeah.
Wow!
He was wearing a shorty kimono and splayed on an outdoor velvet waterbed. And not splayed elegantly, but splayed like a dog that maybe has a year and a half left.
Yeah, like splayed like Rodney.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
That being said, he let me look through every drawer in his house and encouraged me to do it.
That's so bizarre. I love it.
You want to see one of Jacqueline Bisset's pubes?
No, yeah, exactly. Basically.
Yeah. And yes, I do.
Yeah, by the way, the answer is yes.
Yes, please.
And he knows, wait, this is Jacqueline Smith. I'm sorry.
I get them confused too, Robert. It's okay. So Boston is like a great proving ground for you.
Yeah, Boston, for comedy in Boston in the 80s, for me, it was like if I wanted to be a musician and I lived in San Francisco in 1967. It was just like, this soil has been fertilized beyond belief.
Between when you decided you wanted to get on stage and when you were making a living, how long was in the interim?
My first open mic in a comedy club was 2 weeks after my high school graduation at this place called the Ding Ho.
Wow.
And then I was as a freshman in college, I was making money doing shows at UMass, but not supporting myself. So I think 4 years I was supporting myself doing stand-up after I started probably.
That's amazing.
86, 87, maybe 5, 87. But I moved to San Francisco in 1987, and I was a working comedian by then. What happened in Boston was, in the 80s, that was all of these, you know, for the economically, there was a big comedy boom, and comedy was very inexpensive to put on. It wasn't that you didn't need a band, you didn't need, you know, need a soundboard, you just need a microphone and a light. And, you know, mm-hmm. we used to make a joke, you know, you go in the back room, and there was a disco ball, and the urban cowboy fake bucking bronco yeah. and whatever the you know and now it's a comedy club and in 2 weeks it's going to be something else
right.
And so there were all of these clubs that you could work in
yeah
and it was cash it was crazy cash and I moved there and I had a car so I could drive the other comedians to the gigs
yes
because not all of them had cars. And most importantly, I did not drink or do cocaine, which meant that I was dependable to get them there and get them back. And they didn't have to share their cocaine.
Because
cocaine was huge.
In the 80s,
It was a cash business. And I've seen more cocaine than the Eagles roadie. And so I worked every night. Just driving people to gigs and doing sets because, you know, they would, you know, and so I just had so much stage time.
And meeting lots of other comics, right?
I'm sorry?
And meeting lots of other comics and creating those relationships.
Yeah. Many of them still my, you know, most of them still my friends. I mean, the ones that are still alive.
Yeah.
I knew that's how I met Bobcat and Brian Kiley, the writer Brian Kiley. John Groff. We're both there the first night I did stand up.
Was Bobcat the first guy you knew who got really famous?
Yes. Well, Stephen Wright. Stephen Wright and then Bobcat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Bobcat and I used to hate each other. And now he's my best friend.
Oh, I love that.
It's so interesting.
Did that just, was that like an unspoken thing? Sort of an,
oh no.
Very
I love
no,
that.
We did, we made a documentary about it called Joyride that came out in 2019 or 2020. It's followed us on the road and flashed back to our past.
Oh, you guys.
Because there was a lot going on. One, growing up in a town where everyone knows you and you're not parented. At all. I mean, I wasn't raised. I was housed.
Right.
I was, I'm sure, obnoxious. I can't even imagine being around me up until about 30.
Right.
Just like, I'm sorry. I know,
let's say
I know.
45, but yeah.
48. Yeah, but just like just the need and the being on, because I just didn't know. I mean, I had to raise myself, and I you know
yeah.
And so that didn't help. And you know, Bob had these friends, Dan Spencer, Tom Kenny, Paul Kozlowski. Tom Kenny now the voice of SpongeBob.
SpongeBob, sure.
And they were all roommates, and they were you know. And then Bob moved to San Francisco to become became a star. I moved into town, and I became their friend because we all liked this. We weren't cokeheads in our 30s. We were punk rock fans in our
20s.
Right. Yeah.
And we all liked the same stuff. And then Bob came back, and I was like Dad's new wife. It's like, who's this? You know? And we got off on the wrong foot and stayed there for 15 years. And then one night after a show at Largo, Bob just said, "This is stupid. We should be friends."
I love that.
Yeah, and it was literally that easy. And yeah, now we're really.
Is that the same time you met Jay Leno as well?
I met Jay in the 80s in Boston, yeah. I opened for Jay in the 80s. And Seinfeld, I opened for Seinfeld at the Punchline in Atlanta. I opened for Jay in some place in Vermont or someplace. I knew all those guys.
Jay seems perfectly suited for Vermont. I don't know why.
You know, he never touches his Tonight Show money. he always talks about how he doesn't talk. It's like, what would happen?
I know. I think I said a couple of weeks ago, he never touches the Tonight Show money he took from Conan. That is in a safe place, not to be touched. But all right. So you come out west, and then tell us about, because it's so interesting. I was looking at all of your many impressive and cool credits, and it's like you lived the life being a part of the things that I assume Goldie and I and probably JC were like on the other side fans of. Like, I loved the Ben Stiller show. Like, I love Dr. Katz. Like, I love like all these things that I see. You mentioned Mystery Science Theater earlier. That was like the best.
Yeah, that was huge.
So
yeah, was
it's great. Like, how did you make the transition from being this comic who's supporting himself to, you know what, I'm going to be a bigger part of these things. I'm going to be a writer on these projects.
Again, I really came up at a great time. And I had a lot of great friends. So I moved to San Francisco in 1987, always with the goal of living in Los Angeles. Eventually, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a movie star. I assumed I would be.
Yeah, sure.
Why wouldn't I? You know, I moved down to LA at the height of, you know, in the 89.
Well, I'm glad you got away from Boston and all that cocaine.
I've still never done it.
That's
I did once at Nick's Comedy Club, which was I don't know if it's still going, but at the time I lived there, it was largely a money laundering front. we used to call it the Bulletproof Lounge. I sat backstage and watched Sam Kennison do like four long rails of cocaine, go in the men's room, throw up, come out and say, if you don't throw up, you're not doing it right.
Oh my
and then
God.
Go on stage. It was very funny. I moved down to LA, and then Jenny Garofalo, who I knew from Boston, came out, and she knew Ben Stiller, and then we started to do that whole alternative comedy thing just because we were looking for. But by that time, the comedy boom was starting to get a little putrid. And comedy clubs.
That was when Goldie and I stepped on stage. We apologize.
No, literally me grabbing the mic my first time on stage marks the end of the comedy boom.
I love this take of yours, Goldie.
It's documented. But I wanted to, because you were on this thing called the Bob Hope Young Comedian Special. You had a hilarious bit about this.
Hey, no kidding, huh?
So Bob Hope was what our parents thought a comic should be.
Right.
But what we thought was just a painfully unfunny person running around with a golf club doing.
Sure, nothing. Yeah, he was. I'm gonna. This is. Keep going, and I'll find this and show it to you.
So, you know, I imagine you've had a few of these in your career, but when you were doing this Young Comedian Special, was that a moment?
Oh, look at
wow.
that!
Look at the disdain.
Who's this young fella?
I'm going to drain your spirit box.
Did you think that was, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to wake up tomorrow and everything will be different and I will have made it and then I'm
not
the next person?
No, by then I knew that was a bullshit. I thought that would happen when I got on Letterman.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a huge...
Give us a year on that.
I didn't get on Letterman until 19. The Hope thing was in 1994. I mean, I was hot. I mean, I was, you know, I had a period of heat where I was, you know, guy had a bunch of development deals and got my teeth fixed. And, and then I did, I'll never forget, I got Letterman, finally got Letterman. This is a great little show business snapshot.
Okay.
Yes.
I wanted to get Letterman so bad, and I just couldn't get on. And I'm not a good comedian for that kind of performance.
Disagree.
Like I don't always have jokes. I'm much more organic, and I'm not. You know, it's not really my métier.
Yeah, it's like four and a half minutes, and just
I was like, yeah, joke. Stephen Wright is the perfect comedian for that, and I'm not that.
Sentences.
perfect.
Yeah.
But anyway, and when Robert Morton was there, I just couldn't buy my way onto that show. Finally, Robert Morton leaves and the other guy comes in and I get it almost instantly.
Yeah.
And I go to Letterman and I do this set and it's fine. It's completely fine.
Oh no.
Passively, I, you know, it's just fine. I get a laugh, I get laughs, I get an applause break. It was just, you know, when you get, do you ever eat ramen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you get that, it's called a chasu. It's like a big slab of pork.
Yes.
Very little flavor left in it, but it occupies space and has mass. That was what it was.
You got JC with that one.
Oh my God.
That's what it was. It was comedy chasu. And then I got out of the show, and all my friends who lived in New York were out of town, and it was summer, and I just, there was a lot of traffic, so I just walked back to my hotel and changed and went to the movies by myself and flew home the next day.
Oh, right. And
your life changed.
And were you, I mean, did that put you in any kind of funk or anything? Or are you
no,
just kind of
accepted? No, it was, no, but I had a friend named Drake Sather who summed up Letterman perfectly. It was like, yay, I was on TV for 5 minutes at midnight.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, but it was like, I did it. I was very happy that I did it, but that was it. So flash forward the next year, 1997. My future wife and I, she's a big agent, and we're going to go to Tuscany and stay with Robert Morton in his house for a week with some other people. And I'm like, oh, my bete noir, Morty. And this is going to be sweet. And he was so charming and so lovely. And then we're talking about Letterman, and I'm like, wait. And he goes, when did you do Letterman first, Dana? And I went, 96, last year. And he went, and it was clearly not lying. You know, like, you can tell. He was like, no, that was after I left. I was like, yeah, I know. Because you never did it with me? I go, no. He goes, really? You were always on the board. I'm like, no. And he goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Aww. Oh, we loved you. And it was just so, like, this whole thing was all in my head.
Yeah. That's a really...
Morty's a genius. Yeah. Morty's a genius.
I don't know. That's a really good story. That's like...
That's so great.
Because you created your own story about it.
You know the old story about, like, the guy that wants the secret of life, and he travels to the Himalayas, and he climbs to the top of the mountain and sees the great master, and he goes before the great master, and he goes, great master, what's the secret of life? And the great master goes, enjoy every moment. He goes, enjoy every moment? And the great master goes, it's not enjoy every moment?
That's great. Fantastic. All right. So then now you're just fully in it now. You're in, you know, the 90s entertainment scene, which was... do you find, because I think maybe it's just because of my age and bias, but, like, to me, 90s comedy was the coolest. Like, I think about Kids in the Hall, and I think about Ben Stiller's show, and Mr. Show, and Dr. Cat. Like, I'm just like, these are all things that I love, and I feel like, oh, we're never going to top that. Am I wrong? Like, are there things today that I should be watching and enjoying on that level?
I'm sure there are. I don't know, because I am up my own ass. But
other than hanging with Dr. Z.
Yeah. I mean... it was a nice little scene, the Ben Stiller people. And then at the same time, you had the Kids in the Hall. Yeah. And then, you know, Mr. Show was just, I always like to say, Mr. Show was the new order to the Ben Stiller Show's Joy Division.
Everything from Joy Division to New Order.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it was just the Ben Stiller Show without Ben and Judd. You know, it was just people with a like-minded, you know, some sensibility doing what we love. Like, we all wanted to be, like, the things that we loved when we were doing that was we were watching SCTV and Albert Brooks. Like, we all wanted to be Albert Brooks.
Maybe we should give Mr. Brooks a chance to defend himself.
Oh, no, don't talk to me. I need to do it. I have nothing to do.
Yes, we got a little. He does a fantastic Albert Brooks along with Johnny Carson.
I went to the Tonight. The only time I went to the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson was Albert's last appearance. And I stole his dressing room card.
What?
Oh, yes. Cool. Where do you keep it?
It's in the garage. And I would never. But it was very weird because he was friends with Janine, and so I knew him through Janine.
And you were her roommate, right?
Yeah, I was like roommate. Like, she was on my couch or I was on her couch. You know, I was like, I didn't know that he knew who I was. But then I was at a party, a Simpsons party, and I was there, and I was kind of like eyeballing him out of the corner of my eye. And finally, he went, "Hello, Dana." And, he's just great. I mean, that is one of those things, like, you really do. It's like a guitarist meeting Eric Clapton or something, yeah. Or Hendrix is like, well, okay, I did that.
Yep.
Yeah. And so smart. You know, he was talking about, I was friends with Stanley Kubrick. He said in a magazine that he loved my film Modern Romance. So I wrote him a letter and he said, call me up. And he called me and I'd be talking on the phone. And I called him up. And we talk on the phone. And then one day I go, maybe I'll come out to London and we'll hang out. And he's very quiet. I never brought it up again. So one night I'm up and I'm watching Johnny. And Scatman Crothers is on promoting Bronco Billy. And Johnny says, Scatman, and he says to Scatman, he goes, how'd you like working with Clinton? He goes, Johnny, I did a take, and he said, cut, print, and I started crying. I started crying, Johnny. And he goes, why did you start crying? Because it was one take. Stanley Kubrick had me walk out of a snow cat 87 times. And I go, oh, my God, this is too funny. I happen to know it's breakfast in England. Stanley's up. I call him up. Stanley, it's Albert. I'm watching The Tonight Show. Scatman Crothers is dragging your name through the mud. Stanley thunders from across the ocean. Never work with Scatman Crothers. He can't do the same thing the same way twice in a row. Slams down the phone, and we never spoke again.
I was waiting to hear if you also had a Kubrick in your quiver, because the Scatman was excellent, the Brooks is sublime, and then I was like, you can't have a Kubrick, nobody knows.
Well, he could. Well, I was doing Albert doing Kubrick. Kubrick is actually this.
Yeah, he's the kind of Brooklyn.
He's Claire Quilty from Sellers is doing Kubrick in Lolita. He's doing Kubrick. Wow. You have a very beautiful daughter. And in Dr. Strangelove, he's doing Ouija.
Oh, that's so that's unbelievable.
That's nuts. I know.
You know a lot.
But I love
movies.
Those weird, like, oh, that's just me doing that's just me doing this. That's just, yeah. What is the, I love actors' tricks. I once asked, or the weird origins of that. There was a Simpsons episode that John Swartzwelder, who's a flipping genius, wrote, and I've never asked this of a writer ever because I know how terrible it sounds, but Homer was at the grocery store and he was arguing with the register guy, and at one point he goes, the customer's always right, that's why everybody loves us. And the guy goes, get out of the store, and he picked up the separator stick.
Yes.
Yeah. And he went, I'll leave if I can keep this. And I just said, all right, John, how?
How did you write that?
Yeah. I said, like, I've never asked this question of anybody. And he just went, oh, Homer's a golden retriever.
Oh.
Right.
That's what a golden retriever would do. Oh, and it was just like, it was like a revelation. Like, oh, my God, you're right.
That's such a great way to look at Homer, by the way.
He's a golden retriever. When in doubt, he's a golden retriever.
Because Swartzwelder wrote, I think, more Simpsons than anyone by far.
Swartzwelder is the only person who writes scripts that I would read for pleasure.
Right.
Oh, wow. They're just so mind-boggling.
Very funny. By the way, Goldie, you're like that, a Family Guy. I get very excited to read your scripts.
Aww. Yeah.
I thank you, but I would not put my name in the same sentence as
what kind of animal is Stewie?
Stewie is whatever you write in a mad panic when you realize you have 3 hours left to turn in your script.
There it is. That's the Swartzwelder attitude. I love it. Well, so now we're talking about it. Let's talk about it. How did you end up on The Simpsons? Because you talk about shows that shaped certainly my comedic sensibility.
Sure.
Sure is one. And certainly Seth's. Hey, everybody.
Hey, no kidding. So not long after this kind of tags into that, the Morty story, I was getting a little savvy about the business, and I was growing up, and I was engaged, and the comedy boom was kind of waning. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, I wrote a pilot. I'd always been paired with writers that would come up with a pilot. Like, I had so many development deals, and I with great writers, you know, Jace Richdale and I wrote Dana.
You were a DJ. What were you? Zookeeper. What?
Dana was about my family. It was like I was a college student that wanted to be a poet, with a bunch of hunters. It was Jace wrote it, you know, and then Linwood Boomer and I wrote a title that I came up with that he loved that I then said, no, it's a joke. No, we can't call it that. Nice try, the aptly named.
it seems set up for
leading with your chin. Hey, what's this? And then
I thought you were going to say with Linwood Boomer, you came up with a pilot called Malcolm on the Left. Didn't quite Malcolm make it. Perfected it.
I was always everybody's last thing before they hit it. Yeah. And then I wrote one myself called World on a String that was really a great idea. It was basically like the structure of Seinfeld in a Pee Wee's Playhouse reality.
Oh, cool.
Ah, that's cool.
And it did get made by Fox, and it didn't get picked up. It was very close, I've been told repeatedly.
Yeah.
By Morty.
I'm always close. I'm always the last guy. I'm the Pete Best of everything. I really enjoyed writing it, and I found that I really the writing of it was more I found it was more satisfying than acting it. The acting it was almost like an afterthought.
Yeah.
So I said, maybe I'll just, you know, I was living with my girlfriend. We were buying a house. There was comedy was, I, you know, by that time I'd been doing stand up for like 15, 16 years.
Wow.
And I knew that by and large, what it begat was more stand up.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea of going to work every day and being an adult. So I worked on a show, and then that show got canceled. And then George Meyer, who's, I think my wife was his agent. Right. He said, hey, Dana's writing. Would he want to come to The Simpsons for like a day a week? And I was so stupid at the time. I did say, yeah, but I can only come on like a Monday or Tuesday because I still got to go on the road. And they went, all right, come on Tuesday. And so I did that and really loved it.
Yeah.
And then one day I was sitting in the room and Mike Scully came in and said, hey, I think your contract is up. And I was like, literally like, oh, sure, get my stuff. And he just said, you want to just come every day?
Aww.
And I said, yeah, that'd be great. He goes, all right. He goes, I'll never forget. He goes, all right, I'll call your agent. And then he turned and went, sucker, and walked out. And then, you know, I was there for 8 years. And it was, I mean, it was a great moment. I know people hate me from that, like falling backwards into The Simpsons is not something people want to hear.
No, I don't understand that. What do you mean by that?
It's a great story.
Well, like writers are envious of having that opportunity to like, oh. I just like, I kind of fell into it really.
Oh, no.
Didn't even try.
Haven't you heard everybody falls into everything?
Yeah.
Don't you know that?
Yeah. But I was, you know, it was great. And I love all those, you know.
You didn't go to Harvard to get here.
That's true. Well, thank God Mike was running the show because
right.
You didn't have to go to Harvard.
Right. Your Milltown Alliance.
Yeah, exactly. People at New Textiles. And Mike also knew that, you know, you had to have different kinds of flavors.
Yeah, voices. And
Mike knew that you needed different kinds of flavors on a team.
Yeah.
Well, you add a fantastic flavor. And, you know, Dana, we so appreciate you coming today, and we love talking to you, and we would love to talk to you anytime that
yes.
you want to do this. And please come talk to us again when you're doing the next Dr. Zaius season, when that's
coming. Oh, up. Yeah. No, it would be great. Obviously, we're friends. Anytime. I'll, as you can tell, I don't have any problem talking about myself. It happens really well. And I really hope we get to work together again.
Me too. Yeah,
that was great. So it was so such a pleasure to go to a room where everybody had a fastball. It was really great.
Oh, that's cool.
That's nice. Yeah. That is nice. And also a pleasure to go to a room where the guy running it loves stories about Albert Brooks and Johnny Carson.
It
and
worked out well for me.
All right, Dana, thank you so much. You've been awesome. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
It.
Yeah.
See you guys later.
See you, Dana.
Bye.
Oh, God. Dana. Awesome.
Yes.
So fun. He's like the man of a thousand voices. Boy, he does great impersonations and has such great stories. Dana, thank you so much for being here. Now let's get into a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, we sound beautiful, but not as beautiful as our subject today, which is top five Bob Seger songs. A little story before we start this is on Family Guy, we got permission from Bob to use one of his songs, and I guess they didn't read the full page of the script because the joke of it was, why do all Bob Seger songs sound like someone's trying to take a shit out of the window of a moving car?
Oh, no.
And like, so then there was a bit about it where some guy in the window like, argh! And apparently Danny Smith, our old friend, had to field an angry phone call from Bob Seger himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that said, I love Bob Seger. So yeah. Here are my top five Bob Seger songs. Number five, Turn the Page.
Okay.
A very depressing Bob Seger song with a somber, somber saxophone that I love. Number four, a personal guilty pleasure, Shakedown from the Beverly Hills 2 Cop,
oh, yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack. Love that song. A lot of action in that one. Number three, this one got me, Like a Rock.
They used it on
Cornball now.
I love it though. It's if you listen to the song now, it's yeah. It's a good song.
It's Budweiser, right?
Ruined.
No, Chevy.
Oh.
Chevy trucks, Like a Rock.
Okay.
Budweiser, right? A good guess. Number two, Still the Same.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's
you always won every time you placed a bet. Good starting line. And number one, I would say this would be everybody's number one, but I think JC's are going to be such a wild card. Number one for me is undisputedly Night Moves.
Yeah.
The best song about fingering that has ever been written.
Jeez.
All right, Goldie.
Okay. Number five, I'm going with
Kathmandu, sorry.
Yeah, which is, I think that it really mirrors my attitude toward everything.
That's a very you song.
So. I want to be there so badly. When I was up in Alaska, I duetted that with an Inuit guy at a karaoke bar.
Awesome.
I was singing it, I picked it, and then he came up and started doing it with me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was good.
So
it's fun.
Cute.
Number four, I'm going to go with Roll Me Away.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know that.
Maybe Roll Me Away to Kathmandu.
Can you do this with all five?
And you might want to Roll Me Away during number three, one of these Hollywood Nights.
Oh, that's a good one. It's a good one. Good
yeah.
Case. Driving beat.
And then, I mean, I think it's just direct overlap with number two, Still the Same, and number one, Night Moves.
Okay.
Yes.
So, for me, I didn't know Bob Seger very well, and it was
Google.
So I had to kind of listen a little bit.
Yeah, good.
And I maybe like him a little bit more.
Oh boy.
So oh, I'm just going to list basically the songs that I know. There was one song that I'd never heard before that I really enjoyed, which became my number two. But okay. My number five is Against the Wind.
Yeah, love that one.
Number four, Still the Same.
There you go.
Yeah.
See?
I like
See?
That song.
You're locking in.
Number three, Night Moves.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, now I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued.
Number two, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man.
Yeah, that was six for me.
I listened to that and I was like, oh my God, I love this song. This song's good. Oh my God. Yeah, it was just, I had never heard it before. And then number one, I don't know, maybe it's too cliche. Maybe it's not even Bob Seger, but I have Old Time Rock and Roll.
Oh, yeah.
I was about to congratulate us for not having that.
See, that's why I knew you can't pick what JC's going to put. But by
why
the way,
do you like that so much?
Well, first
just
of all,
it's
only
song.
No, only because of Risky Business.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
It's kind of the ultimate boomer, okay, boomer song, I would say, you know, where it's like, yeah, your music sucks and give me this. And I don't want to go if you drag me to a disco. And it's like, no one's taking you
That's
to a
hilarious.
Disco. No one's going, you should go to a disco. That'll be fun for me is to take your fucking obese jeaned corpse into the disco and hang out with this
downer who hates everything and who just wants to get on his motorcycle and ramble. Okay.
It sounds like it's you're just taking the whole shots conceit of the thing is
such it's such bullshit. It's
like it sounds like you're taking shots at Jay Leno.
But that's exactly the type who is like my motorcycle and at the bar we could go anywhere and it's like and then they have this music and I don't know it. It's like
my mother, really every time that comes on the radio, she will turn it up and dance towards me.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
She loves that song.
That's
immensely.
Really cute.
Yeah. All right. That was fun. So, JC, what are we going to top five about? Oh, no. You don't have to say, right?
Well,
you set the one for the next, Viner and Scully.
Yes.
What are you going to stick them with? I can't wait. You're going to get them.
It's not. No. This one is submitted by Louis Schneider. Thank you, Louis.
Hey, Lou.
Top five things you would only get if someone else is paying.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Thought-provoking, yeah. Yes. Lou Schneider.
Yes,
more
thank
than
you,
just
Louis.
A pretty face is Lou.
Yes, he sent me a bunch, so.
Okay. Just go easy, Lou. Let's
I can't
pick
wait to see what
best.
Denzel Washington says.
All right. No, I'm not going to do a Denzel. Why would I do that? Cut that out of here. All right, let's end the show mercifully on a high note. Thank you, Tom and Max. And Tom, you are welcome back next week.
Yes,
I don't know
yes.
about some of the other people, but we're excited to listen to you. I had a quick high note this week was, I don't know if you read this story out of Colombia. There was a plane crash in Colombia maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Yes.
And they were searching for any survivors, and a few people died, but 4 kids survived and lived in the jungle by themselves for 40 days, and one of the kids was 1.
Yeah.
So they had it was like a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Yeah. For 40 days.
And they lived for 40 days.
It's crazy.
So I congratulate them, and I thought that was awesome that they made it. So,
yeah, I don't
great
know if
job,
I could
four
do it.
Kids in Colombia.
Well, the Amazon is pretty fertile. There's a lot of plant life and animals.
Water.
If you're going to survive, that's where you want to be.
It's better than a desert.
There's a few days ins that you can.
Days ins, Amazon. We'll leave the light on.
Well, speaking of abandoned children, my high note is summer camp because. My kids are both there right now.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I think we've been alone in over a decade.
Oh my God.
I think we're alone now.
Trying to fit a dozen years of life into 3 days.
Yeah. Well, how long summer camp?
I'm just shell shocked. No, these are just like 1 week.
Oh, okay.
Like mini camps. And they're coming back and we're doing some stuff. Then they go back to other things and there's day camps. Anyway, but.
Oh, great.
But I just know that they're having a better time than if they were here. And
summer.
I'm having a pretty good time. So
awesome.
Good.
I'm
happy.
What that means.
Very
that's
grateful
code.
For camp.
For sex.
Awesome. That's right. That's what it means. I read it too. All right, JC, what do you got?
My high note is in 2 days on the 15th, Stu drops another single.
He's busy.
He's busy, yes. And this one is a collaboration with none other than Danny Elfman and Poppy. And it's very dark. It's a very dark song. It's not for the faint of heart.
Ooh.
And also at the same time, the music video comes out for it, done by Dark Details. And that's also very dark. So very excited.
Are you in it?
No, not in it. Okay. He flew up to Seattle to
you were it. The you were the cover gal of the last single.
Of the so last single. Maybe. Well, yeah. Well, that song was called Everything She Wants. So
And it's great. That's an awesome song. I really enjoyed that.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Awesome. Congrats, Stu.
Yay, go Stu.
Congrats, Stu. That's right. Well, thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dana Gould. Thank you all for listening. And sigh. We won't be talking to you next week. JC will. But please give shit to Mike Scully and John Viner, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Woo. Unless the aliens come and get me.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.